This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australia's number one award-winning show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
Hide and seek.
Visit joy.org.au/hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Good evening. Welcome to the show where we explore sex, sexuality and self. It is called Hide and Seek. I'm called Dean Beck and he's called Andrew the Apprentice.
Good evening, Dean, and a big thank you to Fiona and Danae and the team.
Kicking goals.
Those chicks who talk footy.
Indeed, they do. And good show it is. Now, Andrew, what have you been doing? The extraordinary life that you lead.
You know, it's all boring nowadays.
What do you mean
almost
by that?
Almost 40 and, you know, it's sitting out in the suburbs and...
Hey, great news about Melbourne Chargers winning the Bingham Cup.
Exactly. A massive congratulations to the Chargers. Yeah, they beat Sydney Convicts, was it 20-7?
Oh, thrashed them.
Thrashed them over Nashville, Tennessee.
And Ben Lankin, what a resplendent figure he makes in pink and a cap.
Well, yes, we get to see all the Manic Monday stuff nowadays, all on social media.
The fashion-forward founder of the Melbourne Chargers. Congratulations to the team.
Yeah, fantastic effort. All the Australian team, the three... Australian teams all got to, I think, the semi-finals of their respective divisions.
And the rest of the international rugby players just crap at this game.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, okay.
Obviously. So, yes.
Hey, what happened to Sydney? They were, like, for the last 8 years, they were the cup holders.
Well, yeah, and now...
And now they're crap too.
Yep, now it comes to Melbourne. So,
well, about time.
Well, yes.
Well done,
so
boys.
So we're hoping there's some big celebrations.
Absolutely. They deserve a... They deserve... Do you know what I...
Ticket take parade.
Well, that would be nice, but I'll let you in on a little secret.
Yes.
And I'll put it out there because we do have a Commissioner of Sexuality and Gender.
Who's got a bus she's going to be taking around the around the state later in the year.
She denies the existence of the Priscilla bus.
Oh, okay.
But that could be a smokescreen. There are a number of them. But I did suggest to the Commissioner in a written email,
yes,
and I was deadly serious, that it would be nice to have one of those government house receptions for the boys.
Exactly. And I did see a tweet by our Premier on, would have been Monday evening our time.
He's over in the USA himself.
He is over in the USA, but he did tweet, and he did a tweet that had, tick, sporting capital of the world. Tick, progressive capital of the world. Tick, Bingham Cup 2016 World Champions. Well done, Melbourne Tigers.
Yes. What a...
So that was very good. Very good from our Premier, Mr. Daniel Andrews. Also, of course, over in the US that same day, we should send a big congratulations to our own Daddy Steve.
Oh, do tell.
Who became ninth in the international Mr. Leather competition.
That's fantastic.
That is absolutely brilliant. Yes.
Oh, he needs one of those too. That'll look.
So Mr. Sydney Leather and Daddy Steve both made the top 20.
Wow, Tim Ball.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, I can't wait to see him. Well, that's fantastic.
And yeah, Daddy Steve officially came ninth.
Well done,
title Jenna. This year went to, off the top of my head, Mr. New Jersey Leather.
Well, congratulations to New Jersey and there, Mr. Leather,
yes,
who is now International Mr. Leather 2016.
Exactly.
Ready or not, here I come. Fight and see, fight somebody. Fight and see, anybody. Fight and see, fight somebody. Instruction time. See, do what you want, wrong and wrong. Take it to without stopping the ground. Stand at attention, show me a sign.
Show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Dean Beck and Andrew the Apprentice are with you. And joining us is a man who has spent quite a bit of his career, professional career, working with the key populations throughout Southeast Asia, and he focuses on HIV, amongst other things, within those populations. His name is Bruce Parnell. He's a principal fellow with Burnett Institute. Bruce, welcome to Hide and Seek.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's a challenging area to be delivering health messages for so many reasons. And whilst there are some similarities with what goes on here, you've got cultural things to deal with. You've got politicians and governments who don't want you there, let alone to acknowledge that they've got the issue. How do you navigate this space?
I think in the field I work in, which is really foreign aid, but a health perspective on that, you have to remain optimistic. And while there are challenges, there are some really good people out there. I know when I first worked in Burma, now called Myanmar, in the mid-1990s, people were saying to me, you shouldn't even be working there. It's a dictatorship government. What I found was people in the Ministry of Health who were really fired up, really keen to do things, really decent people. We've had experiences of politicians in many countries recognising, as they have here, our children are using drugs. Mm. Our children are having sex with people of the same sex. And so there are pockets, but there are also challenges, like if you imagine the safe schools debate here. Imagine you're a 16-year-old trans woman in the Philippines and you're not living with your parents because often they leave home, so you're living on the streets. Your only option for work, employment, is sex work. Then you're concerned about health issues. Where are you going to go?
Or how do you even know if there are health issues like that you need to be navigating? I mean, these are some of the things that we rely on our education system to deliver, but some of these kids may not have even had that.
Yes, and most poor countries are far more religious than we are. And I put that down to, if you're going to get sick and die young, you've got more reason to be religious. but that means that adolescents are in schools that are run by the Christian church, often by the Catholic church. In another country, they might be run by Muslim organisations. They're not going to do safe schools. They're not going to even do heterosexual sex education. Mm. And then we rely here on community groups to reach men who have sex with men, to talk about health issues, or young transgender people or lesbian people. But they're not going to have a Joy FM radio station in most of these countries. We've actually talked with the president of Joy FM about the potential to try and assist some of those countries. They might not have a radio station, but they're starting to do things on the internet and some regional initiatives that are quite good there. Not yet doing radio, but I've seen an interactive map in Bandung City in Indonesia, which is 4 hours from Jakarta. And one of the national community organisations, Focus Muda, which is young people and sexuality issues, mostly run by gay men, they've developed a map of the city of Bandung where you can key in, all right, I'm a male who has sex with male, and then you can see, where can I buy condoms? You can see, where's there a friendly clinic? Where could I get an HIV test? And where can I get other support services? The other support services are thin on the ground. Mm. But they're starting to do stuff using the internet, which is really changing people's access to good services.
You've spent a lot of time working with and for, I guess, aid organisations, so USAID and AusAid, I believe, and United Nations Aid. Do the governments on the ground provide enough resources for HIV promotion?
I think the short answer to that is yes and no. There's been enormous commitment of wealthy countries and wealthy organisations like the Gates Foundation, the Elton John Foundation, have been providing more and more funding, but not enough for the whole world. Yep. Australia's not the only country that's cut back its foreign aid program, and foreign aid, certainly it's not an issue in the current election debates.
Sure. No.
In Australia, and not likely to be. But the other thing that's happening is funding for LGBT issues has mostly come through the HIV funding. There's only beginning to be recognition of broader health and mental health needs of all of the LGBT groups. But also, as countries become middle income, so Thailand's now middle income country, not eligible for global fund money, and Indonesia's on the way to that. And as that happens, countries reduce funding for community groups an increase. If they're putting their own money in, it almost all goes to the health department.
We're speaking with Bruce Parnell, Principal Fellow at Burnett Institute, about his 25 years working in Southeast Asia in the HIV sector. I recall during AIDS 2014, China was cited as an example of the good way forward, in the sense that no longer does it take funds from the Global Fund. It has become self-sustaining in its health response to HIV and making inroads.
Yes, I don't claim to be an expert on this, but I think
Thailand seems like that there is that sort of thing going on too. Is that right?
Yeah, Thailand's doing a fairly good job, not as good as it could be doing. China has the benefit of having all those years under Chairman Mao where they abolished religion. And there's no groups in China going, oh, no, this is against our moral values.
Right. And that's a real resistance thing for someone like you.
Oh, look, I don't want to portray all religions as bad.
No.
Again, like, you know, the Catholic community in the Philippines has some dreadful policies, but then I've met some fantastic health workers working for the Catholic Church. All the community groups, the gay and lesbian groups in the Philippines, they all go to church on Sunday.
Of course.
I think the other thing with China, though, is partly because of just the number of people in China, that means the number of people extremely well educated now. I go to China now and I don't have anything to offer.
Yes.
They've got their own epidemiologists and public health people, and they know what they're doing. But you present them something like evidence that something works. So pre-exposure prophylaxis, PrEP, in many countries, including Australia, there's hesitation. Maybe this will encourage people to have more unprotected sex. China just says, give us the evidence. And if that evidence is right,
it's
we're doing
out.
It.
Right.
And that was going to be a sort of related question, I think, is it religion and culture, or is it the system of government that's
getting
in the way?
Yeah.
Is democracy in some ways a bad thing in that it does...
Oh, democracy's getting in the way, isn't
it? Yeah, does it get in the way?
Oh, what was that about, a red flag?
Well, I think ironically some of the religious arguments. I heard Dennis Altman on the radio the other day. He's actually on a program on BBC 4 in the UK that I was listening to as a podcast. And he was noting that the countries that are most homophobic now are mostly places like Singapore that used to be British colonies.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
And so the British themselves have changed, talking of gay marriage, whereas country like Singapore, it's still
that or the Middle East. And it's very difficult to have a response to something like HIV if you don't acknowledge you have a population of which is gay.
Yes, increasingly around the world it's becoming clear, just as we learned in Australia in the 1980s when they had the Grim Reaper campaign and they said everybody's going to be at equal risk of HIV. We now know that Australians are not all at equal risk. It's clearly an epidemic amongst men who have sex with men. In the US, it's also an epidemic amongst people who inject drugs because they didn't do harm reduction like we did. So the epidemic's containable, but we used to think in other countries it'll become a broad-spread heterosexual epidemic, and it hasn't.
The big sleeper is Russia, though, where they don't acknowledge injecting drug use, they don't acknowledge the gay population, and HIV is at rates that is just off the scale and continuing to excel. And the likes of Chris Byra, who's now the president of the International AIDS Society, who ran the clinic in Moscow for gay men, was kicked out.
Yeah, and I mean, the numbers are much bigger in Russia, but again, I'll stick to where I've had most experience. Mm. Recently, I've been in the Philippines, and they used to have really good needle and syringe exchange programs for drug users. One or two politicians, like you might have one or two politicians here influence the whole parliament, they've cut that out.
But so one of those shining lights politically is the health minister, I believe, in Indonesia, who was featured on Q&A during the AIDS 2014 conference here. What is your response to the health minister of Indonesia?
Oh, Nafsir Mboy is fantastic. Mm. She used to be the head of the National AIDS Program. I was lucky enough to meet her a few years before she had that position. I don't know the reasons, but some people in every country know how to work the political system. And I remember...
We don't need to know the reasons.
So she has now become the health minister. Indonesia's a fascinating country. We had a group from Indonesia visited Australia last year, and Burnett Institute hosted them. And it was a group of 15 people from the Ministry of Health, Ministry of Planning, which is the most senior ministry, Bappenas, Ministry of Finance, Ministry of Social Welfare, Ministry for Youth, coming to Australia to visit Melbourne and Canberra and Sydney, specifically to look at what is our legislation for government to fund community groups. Because Indonesia in the past had had so much corruption that they got to a point where they had to say, we're not letting any government money go to community groups.
Right.
Because it might have been to my cousin.
Sure.
Now they've actually, they're not, they want to. So as they're becoming wealthier, they're going to fund their own programs. They can't fund community groups. Well, this group of people are very senior public servants, not politicians, but they clearly know the politicians. Politicians knew they were coming. And so there's incredible goodwill there. But it's sort of a slow system to change because they've been so scared of change in the past. And so HIV, and I think, lesbian and gay, transgender health issues generally require a lot of soft politics, talking about culture, talking about social change, talking about people's personal stories. They're not usual ways for some of the countries closest to us to deal with things. But it's gradually changing because the media is opening up.
We will take a look at a rather extraordinary meeting that's being held. It's called a high-level meeting being held by the United Nations just next week when we come back and speak to Bruce Parnell, Principal Fellow with Burnett Institute. Dean Beck and Andrew the Apprentice with you on Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9.
This is your program for exploring sex, sexuality and self on Joy 94.9 with Dean Beck and Andrew the Apprentice. And we are chatting with Principal Fellow at the Burnett Institute, Bruce Parnell. Bruce, you've spent a lot of time in Southeast Asia, Indonesia, Philippines in particular. And you mentioned briefly before about working with community. What are some of the... How do you do that? Is it just a matter of rocking up into a community and talking to the doctors or the nurses, or who else do you talk to?
It's an interesting question. Many years ago, the Australian government was far more generous with foreign aid, and so we would be able to build up a case that we want to run a program for a particular community group in a particular country. And then we would talk with that community group, and you would have to get the permission of the government of that country.
Right.
And then Australia would often fund it. And, of course, accountability, there's all sorts of codes of practice that we follow in order to make sure Australia's foreign aid money is properly spent. What's happening bit by bit is, as Australian aid's reducing, the most recent work I've been doing in Southeast Asia particularly has been at the invitation of UNICEF.
Okay.
So UNICEF are keen now to work with adolescents on issues around HIV and sexual health, and they've invited us in as basically advisors. So myself and Chad Hughes from Burnett Institute and Lisa Davidson are often invited in, and we'll get there 2 days before a meeting, and then we'll find we're at a meeting with the Ministry of Health, the National AIDS Program, the peak community groups. So in every country there's umbrella groups for community organisations. But then the most satisfying bit of my work, at least, is when we go beyond that national level out into the provinces, out into the smaller cities, and we get to work more hands-on with health sector staff, people who are running community health clinics, the representatives of community groups at a local level.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually get to, instead of someone representing adolescents who's themselves 30 years old, you actually get to meet some of the younger people. And some of that work then is formal planning and formal teaching. But again, once you break down barriers and build up trust, and we build up trust between them. So we use a lot of adult education methods of participatory workshops where we ask people to do drawings about their own lives. We had some fantastic group drama in Indonesia where we did a drama around what makes a clinic user-friendly for young men who have sex with men and transgender people. But we got the health staff to play them, and we got the young people to play the doctors and nurses. And just bit by bit, step by step, so not giving them a scripted drama, but like, how do we make that end of the room look like a clinic? So they set up some chairs as a waiting room and a desk where the nurse was. Behind a screen divider, we had the doctor. And the woman who was the nurse was actually, about 17 years old, trans woman. They put a nurse's hat on her and a white coat of sorts. And one of the women who was a doctor, a Muslim doctor with the veiled head, looking very conservative, I said to the group, well, how are you going to make her look transgender? And someone brought out a handbag and a great big necklace, and she put that around and everyone had a laugh. She then came to the waiting room. We got someone to pretend to be her friend to convince her to come and say, I want to see a doctor. The nurse, who was this transgender adolescent, just looked her up and down and threw her nose into the air. It was like, it just had the whole room laughing. But it led to, over the next few days, the health staff talking with the adolescents and getting to know each other. And then they developed ways of, well, how is our clinic going to be more friendly for you?
This is a long, long way from a UN high-level meeting in New York, which everyone's talking about in the sector, that is to fast-track the response to HIV East so that we can achieve some rather, pie-in-the-sky, outcomes, of which have already been put back a decade. This grassroots stuff, compared to this, you know, New York glass thing that's going on next week, you must feel somewhat removed from the whole thing in some ways.
No, I think the exciting bit of what we do at Burnett Institute is we work at all those levels. So I'm not directly involved in the high-level meeting.
Sure, but how do you manage that?
If you don't have the high-level meeting, you can't get UNICEF to say we'll fund this and go to the country and get permission to work with them.
Which gives you that fast track straight into the bureaucrats when you get there and all of that, I guess.
Yes, because right. Some of those bureaucrats will be the ones who are in New York at the high-level meeting. I know it's a pretentious-sounding name, the UN high-level meeting. What it actually means is the UN General Assembly, it's called, which is one representative from every country, about 194 countries at the moment, and they have what's called a special session on HIV. So the first one was about 10 years ago. The last one was 5 years ago. It's pie in the sky in some ways, but one of the goals in 2011 was to get 15 million people on HIV treatment by the year 2016. We now have 14 million people in the world on HIV treatment. So it does make a difference. It focuses things. The UN's not like a parliament, though. So if there's 193 or 194 countries and the majority vote for it, it doesn't mean every country has to follow it. So one by one, a country will say, yes, we endorse this. Then they have to go back to their own country and present that, and there's ongoing debate.
And the outcome will be a whole new set of guidelines that you are then charged with implementing on the ground in some of these countries.
Yeah, guidelines that you can't achieve unless you go down and do that group fun drama stuff at a local level. So in some ways, I like all those guidelines.
But there's also a challenge in that at one stage, you cannot go to every single medical clinic in Indonesia to run a drama course with the local community and the doctors and the nurses in that clinic. But also, I understand you get guidelines that change a lot as well. So how do you get, I suppose, both at the grassroots, what you do at that clinic, how do you get that message out to the other clinics? And then also how do the guidelines coming down from the top support that?
I think it's a range of things happen. And those who were in Melbourne for the AIDS 2014 conference would have seen how many people came from all around the world, but particularly from our region.
Yep.
And so you get some of the UN groups and or some of the big international NGOs, even groups like World Vision, Oxfam, Red Cross, will fund some of the young people to come to those conferences. Some of the ministries of health will fund the top doctors to come to those conferences. They all talk together. There's a culture that becomes obvious. And then each country has to work out what are our priorities. Mm. So going back to Indonesia, they're aware that there are a few bigger cities in Indonesia where the epidemic's focused. In the Philippines, in a similar way, there are about five cities. The HIV epidemic's becoming much more focused in cities now than it used to be. And so they're not saying, let's educate every teenager in the whole country. They're saying, let's start with one city in Indonesia, with mm-hmm. Bandung, which is a university city.
Right.
And let's get things right. Now they're happy enough with what happened. They're expanding it to three other cities this year. But they're not doing the whole country.
One of the most disturbing things that I've read in preparing for tonight is that the Philippines is in a diabolical state. And amongst those who are most infected, it is yet again men who have sex with men, in fact, 81%, which reflects very much the situation here in this country. But these are young people. They're under 34.
Yeah, half of the cases in the Philippines are amongst 25 to 34-year-olds. Yeah. They're predicting there might be around 130,000 people infected every year by the year 2020.
Just to compare that to here, we have 1,000 people each year.
Yeah. Now, remember, the Philippines has a much bigger population. Sure. They have 100 million people. But yes, it's...
This is on our doorstep.
Part of what's happened in the Philippines, it's a very bizarre situation. In the Philippines in the 1990s, they had some of the best responses in Southeast Asia. They had the community groups working with the government. They had a strong commitment to human rights. They were one of the first countries that started doing needle and syringe exchange programs. But then by about the year 2005, the epidemic had dwindled off. And I went there for a short-term job with UNICEF just for a few weeks in 2005. And what people told me was, you told us there was going to be a big epidemic and there wasn't. So why do we have to keep doing this? The National AIDS program that in 1998 had about 12, 14 staff. In 2005, it was reduced to one staff and one admin person, so two staff.
And look what happened.
And look what happened. You turn your back and things. Now, we're aware of this stuff because we're all aware, listeners to Joy are aware of HIV. I've just been involved in a three-week course on malaria for people from Indonesia, and the same things happened with malaria. Countries have got to almost eliminating it and said, oh, we don't have to do anymore, and then it bounces back.
Reminds me of syphilis locally.
It's also, I mean, although it's horrible for it to be a good case study, it's a good case study in many ways.
We've just cited three examples.
Exactly.
Malaria, HIV in the Philippines, and syphilis here, all of which could be good case studies for taking your eye off the ball.
Mm. Yeah.
We're speaking with Bruce Parnell, Principal Fellow at Burnett Institute on Hide and Seek.
Whatever your tastes, you'll find it on
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Something for everybody.
At Joy 94.9, there are approximately 300 volunteers bringing you over 75 shows, 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. That's a lot of facts and figures to take in, but here's one more number for you to think about. 1-300-569-949. That's the number to call to talk to the Joy sales team about becoming a Joy sponsor. One phone call can get your business on air and online, reaching thousands of Joy listeners at a price you can afford. 1-300-JOY-949. That's 1-300-569-949.
Team Beck and Andrew, the Pinterest. on Hide and Seek, Bruce Parnell is with us, one of the principal fellows, apparently, at Burnett Institute.
Just worried people might think I'm the director.
I never said director. And I would get the wrath of one of your other colleagues, as you well know. But we've been talking about the HIV response in Southeast Asia, and this all comes ahead of AIDS 2016, which is only a month and a bit away. and that will be in Durban, South Africa. We had sort of PrEP as a central focus for AIDS 2014. That was sort of the take-home message. And we're now seeing that rolled out here locally.
Yes.
Any idea, Bruce, as to what you think might be the outcome of 2016 in Durban?
I'm certain it will be focused on Southern Africa. There are about 11 countries in Southern Africa, which together account for, I think it's around 2/3 of HIV infections in the world.
Right.
It's a very different type of epidemic there to what it is in Southeast Asia. It's largely like adolescents with HIV, 68% of them are girls, not males.
Yeah.
So there's an age difference in African countries where women are getting infected much younger than men, and that's because one of the strategies men have is they think if we have sex with someone younger, they won't be infected. There are sorts of cultural issues because a lot of those countries are very, very right-wing Christian, so hard to talk about sex, still hard to talk about condoms, and still a denial of HIV. But that's happening alongside enormous successes in treatment and a better focus on who is getting infected and what do we need to do about it.
Is PrEP an option in Indonesia, in Philippines, in Southern Africa?
Basically, PrEP was first found to work amongst heterosexuals who were married.
Yep.
But then over the next few years, they did research that very clearly shows it works for men who have sex with men. When the World Health Organization in Melbourne announced a global commitment to PrEP and saying we should roll out PrEP, they said just for men who have sex with men. And I thought, that's a bit strange. And what I learnt
then... In fact, they said every gay man should be on PrEP.
Yes.
Which was an interesting statement.
You can over-medicalise an epidemic. But... And there are some potential problems with PrEP, and one of our research labs at Burnet is working on developing a medicine that can be used for PrEP that's not a medicine that's also being used for treatment.
And so you don't get a resistance.
So you don't end up with drug resistance, and you don't end up with the same side effects, and if someone does get infected, they're not...
They don't limit their treatment options.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean they're about to discover it, but it's one of the interesting things our scientists are looking at. But what I asked one of the WHO people then, why are you only suggesting this for men who have sex with men? And the answer then, which I gather has changed, was the global groups representing sex workers and the global groups representing people who inject drugs said, we don't want you to recommend that, because many governments will force us to have PrEP. So like an extension of that idea of like, you're going to control HIV amongst sex workers, force them to have a pill every day.
Right.
And
I don't think that would work.
No. And my understanding is, and I may be wrong, but my understanding is the global sex workers groups are now saying, okay, we do think PrEP's a good idea for us as well.
It's a challenging space for you when you... We had this message that HIV was embedding itself into far-flung outlying areas, the hill tribes of Papua New Guinea, and we have to get into that response. And yet you tell me it works out better if we respond to the big cities. Tell me about that interesting new direction, if you like.
Yeah, I think the World Bank's been saying for years that we need to focus our resources on the epidemic. And their main concern 5 years ago even was countries are spending money on HIV and doing education in every secondary school. They need to be focusing on who are the young people really at risk. And the World Bank's been a leader in that, but the other UN groups have since picked up on that and doing a lot better. But the other area of focus is not just on who are the people at risk, who are the key populations, but where are they? Mm-hmm. And we used to think in Australia, well, there's men who have sex with men who don't identify as gay and we're not reaching them. And I remember once saying to the health department in Victoria many years ago, who do you think they're getting HIV from? They're very reachable by the gay community, so don't try and reach them in other ways. And that led to our first BEATS program at the Victorian AIDS Council.
which was then disbanded. But yes, I get
right. But partly disbanded because there's a lot of resources to reach a very small number of people.
Well, partly disbanded because they eliminated the Beats. But anyway, that's another story. True, now have apps.
Yes, we now have Grindr. But the big thing that I'm focused on now is it's an epidemic amongst cities. And there was a project a few years ago in Asia called the Six Cities Project. And it was about HIV and gay men in six big cities in Asia. And one of them was Bangkok, and it was like, well, why can't you reach men who have sex with men in Bangkok? They're not hard to find. They're now about 34% of gay men in Bangkok have HIV, in a country where it should have been really easy to reach them. Now, part of what's going on there is cities attract new people all the time. We now know when someone's infected with HIV, their viral load is extremely high for the first 2 months. Even when an antibody test doesn't show they're positive, that's the time when they're most infectious. We used to not use the term infectious because it stigmatized people, but in any other disease,
the fact of the matter is, that's when they're at most infectious.
And even 8 months after being infected with HIV, even if you're not on treatment, your viral load goes down.
Yes. Mm.
So what's happening in big cities, including Bangkok, but also Jakarta and Manila, Chengdu in China, is new people are coming in and getting infected, and while their viral load's still very high, the ability to meet other men and have sex with them is right there in your face. Yeah. It's available. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
With no symptoms.
With no symptoms, and probably quite often no knowledge of HIV because they come from rural areas. Mm-hmm. And that's where the epidemic's growing most quickly. And So again, it goes back to all the stuff we talk about here. We've got to have education at a younger age. We've got to make it easier for people to talk about it. But we've also got to get more people tested and on treatment.
How easy is it to get testing into the cities, for example?
Again, that's one of those yes and no answer questions, because it should be really easy.
Yeah.
But it's not easy. Well, for example, in the Philippines, if you're under 19, you're not allowed to get tested for HIV unless your parents sign a consent form. So amazing. Imagine how easy that is.
Yeah.
That will be hard if you're 17 years old, gay man here. Imagine in a Catholic country like the Philippines. They're not going to bring their parents in.
Bruce, we have to wrap it up, but at the end of this year, there's going to be a big call to top up the Global Fund. It's the biannual top-up. What would you like our federal government to do?
The Global Fund's an extremely important part of the global response to HIV and to TB and malaria. And for all three diseases, for the same reason, that the Global Fund is evidence-based, it knows what needs to happen, it's capable of directing its money to where it needs to go and doing that in a transparent way that doesn't enable corruption. And our government, whoever is in government at the end of this year, I would hope, would be increasing funding to the Global Fund. That's within a context of cutting back our foreign aid overall. But my understanding is the major political parties in Australia are committed to doing that. To what extent? We don't know yet.
Let's not forget there's a very rich man out there who will match dollar for dollar. It's not Gary Singer or Jefferson, who will match dollar for dollar, and that is Bill Gates for the Global Fund, and hats off to him. Bruce, indeed. It's been a delight to have you in. Thank you very much for your insights regarding the Southeast Asian response to HIV, and keep up the good work. It's good stuff you do.
Thank you.
Bruce Parnell, a principal fellow with Burnett Institute. The Apprentice and I will say goodnight after this.
I'm on fire. I'm on fire.
Hide and seek.
Fireball.
That was your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self.
That was.
Interesting man, Bruce Parnell.
Yes. He doesn't get to go to AIDS 2016 in Durban, though.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing all the bloody work. All the work, and he's not allowed to go. Yes. Well, because, you know, not everybody can go, apparently.
But apparently.
You'd think that, you know, some of the ones that are doing some pretty amazing work around the world might be able to go to a world conference.
There's been nobody left at the Burnett then. Who's going to man the phone?
Who's going to save the world if they're not up with the latest? There'll be a report.
There'll be a report.
Yeah, we'll read that.
All right. Well, it's time for us to head off. Now, of course, you have to remember that Joy's annual Radiothon kicks off this coming Friday, the 3rd of June.
And it goes through to the 10th.
The big night or big time, of course, is next Friday.
The 9th. It's my birthday.
Oh, yes.
Oh, and then the 10th. The double your money.
Well, okay, we're going to chronological order. You have to join as a member during Hide and Seek next Wednesday.
And we've got a very special guest.
Extremely special guest joining us, so make sure you tune in for that. Then on Thursday, it's Dean's birthday, so
yeah,
whatever.
Well, no one will remember.
And then, of course, on Friday, the 10th of June at 7:30, the Hour of Power is happening with...
AM.
That's right. Mm. With
you don't want to miss it.
With our special patrons matching dollar for dollar every donation that comes through. So
amazing stuff.
So make sure, save your donations for Friday morning, but become a member during Hide and Seek on Wednesday evening next week.
Now, we should say goodnight, I guess.
We should. A big thank you, of course, to David, who does all of our podcasts.
Big thank you to you, Andrew the Apprentice.
That's all right. Coming up next is Andy Kay with Black, White and Rainbow.
Till next time, keep well.
Bye for now.
You can subscribe to Hide and Seek's podcast for free. Visit joy.org.au/hideandseek for more information. Suggest a topic, a guest, or provide feedback. Email hideandseek@joy.org.au.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation. Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.